So he was targeted because he had an authentic thought process. However it happened, he did not look to the state for a definition of who he was. He was given his power from the earth. He knew where it came from. He called it his higher power, and that he channeled through his body. He had an authentic thought process, and we've been arguing that it only exists, that the thought process only exists when it is authentic. As infants under glass, we see, all of us, we see the lies. We feel the lies which surround us, but we form different conclusions about them, depending on an unmeasurable number of factors. Some, like me and Prince, because our parents were too enmeshed in their own mutual issues to bother much with those of their children's, conclude that the lies are the problem, that the lies are the problem, and we must expose them. Or in my case, more just, I had so many, and probably with most of us, so many questions that had to be answered. I just couldn't figure anything out. But others conclude that for some unknowable reason, the lies must be served, protected, furthered, bowed down to. Self-abnegation became the price of our parents' false happiness or false stability. That's that false social order they're trying to impose on us. When it is enforced by the threat of violence or necessity or pressure applied of any kind, it's not true happiness, it's not true order. It is, in fact, disorder. It is, in fact, violence. But to honor the questions that come as the reasons for all the lying, but to honor the questions that come as to the reasons for all the lying requires a journey to truth, which, as Prince says with Alice, is a journey to the self. The true self. I'm quoting at length from the biographer of Nikola Tesla because in this excerpt we can see that only with the right story can we get unstuck from the mindset of class and advance to our freedom. Quote, during the time when she, and she's speaking of Katherine Johnson, who was a friend of Nikola Tesla, and perhaps something else as well. Perhaps a friend was the role she was playing. We'll probably never know, but there's certain suggestions of that, I think. During the time when she languished, Nikola Tesla was brashly inspired to think about writing one of his more To think about writing one of his more curious prophecies on the future of women. It was a subject on which he gyrated and fussed, and yet seemingly could not leave alone. The year before she was stricken because she felt her life was meaningless. And that's why I'm wondering if she may have been one of the false folks planted into his life. We have to know there was a whole bunch of them. You cannot create a secret weapon that is now used to suppress the global population without them all over you. I would be very surprised if they allowed anybody around him who was not, well, except for the folk again that they were not able to get rid of, who were from. Because he at that point was 70 years old at the point of this writing, but I believe they were on him a lot sooner than that. And he lived to be, I believe, 86. So his friend, Katherine Johnson, felt her life was meaningless, that her life had been a reflection only a reflection only of the risks and acts and triumphs of others. Now she felt a stranger to herself, stripped equally of hope and anger. She felt deluded, cheated, and infinitely weary. I mean, she definitely sounds like one of Alice's patients, but I mean, we're all, to some degree or another, underclass, subject to the same, a similar kind of malaise when we are all being made use of by the global state. Continuing. The year before she was stricken, Nicola had given an interview to a Detroit Free Press reporter on the quote-unquote problem of women. With the glibness of any other man, he bemoaned their descent from the pedestals so thoughtfully built by men for their entrapment. He'd worshipped women all his life, he said, out of special deference from afar. But now that they were matching their minds against men's, venturing into open competition with gods naturally appointed, was not civilization, quote unquote, itself in jeopardy? The answer was a question that presumably went unasked by most Sunday supplement readers of the 1920s. Whose civilization? Now, with Catherine's illness preying on his thoughts, he turned the matter over relentlessly in his mind and finally gave another interview, this time to Collier's. During it's dated January 30th, 1926. The article was threateningly, and it was written obviously earlier, but this is when it was published. The article was threateningly entitled, When Woman is Boss, and described a new sex order in which the female would emerge as intellectually superior. On the one hand, he appeared to be all for it, but on the other, filled with trepidation. Had he understood the real waste of Catherine's life? Asks Tesla's biographer, Margaret Cheney. And thanks to Alice, we can now see that the waste of our lives is not due to any specific role we're assigned, but in the assignment of roles, period. Continuing. Whatever his motivation, he ended up ambivalently prophesying men and women into human beehives in a disturbingly mechanistic view of the utopian rational society. It was clear to any trained observer, he said, that a new attitude toward sexual equality had come over the world, receiving an abrupt stimulus just before the First World War. Naturally, he could not foresee that in the wake of the Second World War, women would again backslide and relinquish much more social and economic gain in a compulsion to procreate. And I had to comment, we now see that we, along for the ride, subjects of the most damaged few who gave birth to themselves from the head of Plato, following the unseating of the aristocracy in the aftermath of the French Revolution, that things do not just happen. These hidden power guys orchestrate, manipulate our lives behind scenes, and this unseen but true, quote-unquote, reality we all feel when we arrive and our brilliant bodies are forced to decide what to do with the malaise that we feel all around us when we arrive.